Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a great guest for the show today, Hunter Jensen. He's been in the past a strategic advisor, a CTO of a few different companies. And today he is founder and CEO of Barefoot Solutions. Hunter, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Thomas.
Absolutely. So let's start off by talking about what kind of led you from becoming a CTO, from being a CTO to becoming a founder.
Yeah, actually, I was a founder first. So my journey started in college. I was in the computer science department and I dropped out because not out of college, but out of CS because they weren't teaching the new stuff. I wanted to learn web development. There was like one course. So instead, I got a liberal arts degree, but started checking books out of the library and taught myself how to build websites and started picking up gigs on Craigslist to write PHP code and build out web applications. So this is like 2001, 2002. So like pretty early days. When I graduated, I just turned that into a full-time gig as a freelance developer. And then when I realized that you can only make so much money or grow so much when you're billing for your own time, that's when I got really serious about starting Barefoot Solutions. And so we grew organically. I started hiring folks for the things I wasn't very good at or the things that I didn't like doing. And I've been doing that for 20 years, over 20 years at this point. The CTO part is actually folds underneath the CEO job in that some of our clients, often startups, need really high-level strategic technical guidance. And so I joined these startups as a fractional CTO who are clients of Barefoot Solutions. So that's how that folds in.
Okay, I get that now. And I do the same thing, head of my own team, but then do fractional design executive work for our startups. So let's take a step back and talk about how the problems that you solve. And I want to take some time to appreciate the problems that you spend a lot of time chewing on.
Yeah, solving problems is in our DNA. That's in the name of the company, Solutions. And often we are tasked with developing software, custom software for companies that automate processes that are time consuming or inefficient or not scalable, and solving them in a way that unlocks the potential of those solutions, right? Enabling companies to focus their attention elsewhere because this bit has been automated, or these employees are now way more productive and more efficient because we have automated something that previously was just very manual and time consuming to do. That at its core, that's often the types of solutions that we're providing.
Where do you think, in terms of the market nowadays and folks wanting to be founders and build things, I know what I've been seeing a lot in the marketplace in terms of the direction folks are going, in terms of being founders and putting things out in the market space. I'm curious what you think the landscape is tending to look like now.
It's so different. Like this year and towards the end of last year, for as long as I can remember, there was like a SaaS like playbook for founders, right? You have your idea, you do your competitive research, you go out and you raise money, then you go heads down and you spend 9 to 9 months building product. And then in stealth mode, right? And you raise capital and then you launch and you have a competitive advantage. You're like the first mover in the space. And that's just how it worked. And then you've get your product market fit right, and you're off to the races. That is dead. That does not work anymore. And the reason is all these AI tools that are available now. You know, and I talked to founders and VCs about this, and the tooling makes it so that you don't have to be a developer and you can build an MVP and you can do it in a month instead of a year. And you don't need that initial seed capital. You need a little, but like you don't need what you used to need. Now, that's very exciting for founders, but that also means that the competitive advantage is gone. If you can build it in a month without a lot of capital, so can a bunch of other people. Like, I use the example of this. This was like maybe 2 years ago. I needed a new headshot for my LinkedIn profile. And I was like, let's try out one of these AI tools and see how it does. And I snapped a bunch of photos. I'm in a t-shirt and it generated 40 or 50 images for me. And some of them, I had three arms and was missing teeth, but a few of them were good. This was like a couple of years back when these tools were really rough, but some of them are good. And if you go on LinkedIn right now, you can see the one that I chose. And like, I'm in a suit. I don't own that suit. So the entrepreneur in me was like, huh, that's a neat business. Now I paid $20 for it. I could probably spin something like that up in a weekend. And then it occurred to me, that's not a good business because I can spin something like that up in a weekend. And fast forward 3 months later, there's 50 of these things and they're free or they cost $5 and it's not a good business. So the first mover advantage is dead now. And the question becomes, what competitive advantage can we have? And one of the things that I'm seeing in the space right now is data, proprietary data. If you have a data set that others don't, they can't move against you quickly. And so what I've been telling potential founders, if I were starting a new business tomorrow, I would be looking for like old established companies that have really interesting data sets that aren't leveraging them well, and try to buy that or license it and implement AI to really leverage that stuff, because not everybody can do that. You got to make a deal, right? You got to find that data that's not like publicly available. So to me, that's like what's happening in the landscape right now. And it's really exciting, but also at the same time, as someone that sells custom software development services, it's a little bit scary, right? Because it's being like commoditized and democratized, where you don't necessarily need that 9 months of software development anymore to build your MVP.
Yeah, the thing is, Hunter, so many good points brought up there, that is that I see so many startups, I talk to so many founders, work with a lot of founders, and there's a lot of cool AI ideas, AI related ideas. And then you first hear and you're like, oh, okay, whoa, that's cool. Then there's these, when you think a few more steps, there's all kinds of monetization problems. And there's one of like, why can't anyone just build that? Because you just built something on top of an LLM and you're just like passing through queries and then just serving up stuff that ChatGPT can do. Maybe you do it like 10% better or something like that, but will your idea take off? I don't know. And it seems like you have to have something else there.
Exactly. And I call them LLM wrappers. Not that I came up with that. Plenty of people are saying that. But like in the very early days, when people didn't understand how LLMs work, a lot of new companies were just putting a UI in front of one of these foundational models and calling that a business. And that ain't a business, right? That is just a wrapper on top of someone else's technologies. And even the VCs didn't get that early on. I talked to one who will not be named that is very concerned that they spent a year investing in LLM wrappers that don't have core intrinsic value, right? Now, with all that being said, I do see one of the trends I'm seeing right now is that there is a large segment of companies that cannot use third-party LLMs. These are companies and employees that spend all day dealing with confidential information, right? You can't just upload your client's data into ChatGPT and ask questions about it. It's too risky, right? Think law firms and financial services, pharmaceutical companies, defense contractors, you name it. And so one of the areas that we're currently working on and built and actually building a product for is around being able to leverage LLMs on-premise or on your cloud infrastructure. That is not easy yet. And so building tools and a platform really that would enable like private, secure on-prem, I say on-prem, but often that means on cloud, access to LLMs, a vector database, agents that are connected to your other company systems, and really like building out an AI operating system for your business, right? Think about a future where you don't even really log into your CRM anymore. You have a chat-based or visual interface where you can ask the questions that you need to ask, or you can ask an agent to update your CRM, but it all happens through this kind of platform AI OS. I think that's where we're headed. And SaaS is not going to work for that. It's going to need to be custom for your company because your company is a snowflake and it has unique processes and it's got that old data store that you've had for 10 years that none of these SaaS platforms integrate with and all sorts of other things. And so to me, building out those platforms, that's where we are right now. That's like that's the problem we're focused on solving.
I think folks like you and I who work providing services for organizations that are trying to do something innovative. And then tell me if you agree with this, is that on one bucket, you've got startups or some kind of a new venture that's trying to build something new. And then on the other side, you have digital transformation projects where it's a big established company, has deeper pockets, and they say, hey, we want to spend a bunch of time, energy, building some internal tooling to make our business more efficient. And the thing that you said seems to slot into that, where there's a sort of business opportunity for big businesses doing like an on-prem-ish. I know what you mean. It is like on-prem, like this on-prem-ish, hey, we're dealing with medical data or legal data and we aren't allowed, or government secrets and things, we're not allowed to deal with it at a certain thing. We have to have it in-house. So then you just take lessons from what's in the marketplace and kind of use that and use your own llama kind of thing and just on-site, just build something up.
That's exactly right. And if you look at the market right now, you know, what there was like a single news article that actually sent me down this path last year, or it was in January of this year, actually. Goldman Sachs rolled out what they call GSAI, which is for their employees. It's internal and it's an LLM and it's RAG database and it connects to all their systems and it's meant to boost the productivity of their analysts and their wealth advisors and all of these folks, right? And so I started looking at that and I realized that a lot of the like Fortune 5 or 100 or what have you are doing this year. They're rolling out big internal AI systems. And it occurred to me that like most companies are going to need tools like this. And the startups are just not thinking about it that way. They're like, there's a whole segment of people that are thinking about AI implementations for specific use cases, right? And that's what the startups are doing right now, is they're trying to solve for specific use cases. But the reality is we need a platform for our business and for our employees that can be used in tons of different use cases. And so I think, and what my thesis and what we're working on is delivering that to mid-market companies in a product kind of slash service way so that it's customized just for them is what the next several years looks like, because all these firms need it. And your mid-market companies, they don't have the resources of Goldman Sachs to be able to just build it out completely custom internally. Like they need a starting point and they need a service provider that's able to do that. And that's where we're slotting in. So I do completely agree with what you say. And even more, I'm like betting big on it and doubling down on it.
And really what you're saying is not the giant companies with the deep pockets, the mid-market, kind of mid-tier companies who want to build out internal AI tooling. And how many, what percentage of, this is just making up numbers, but you know, how much of the market cares about security and secrecy? I think they all should care.
They don't.
Especially if you're dealing with customer, because I guess if you're dealing with customer, because there's the HIPAA, there's stuff that's obvious, like HIPAA or things that deal with government information or legal stuff. But I guess anyone who has customer data, right? And that could be the larger market opportunity.
Yeah. So what I'm seeing right now is that, all right, you have, let's just say like consumer facing e-commerce companies. They don't care yet, but they will. What I'm seeing right now is that the companies that have compliance responsibilities, they care a lot. They already have teams around compliance. So, you know, medical, financial, insurance companies, defense, pharmaceutical, biomed, like those are the companies that already spend a lot of money on compliance because it impacts their bottom line. If you're selling tequila on a website, yeah, you have customer data and you are responsible for being a steward of that data, but it is not a priority for a company like that today. Now, fast forward a couple of years and you start getting sued by the EU for your GDPR and other things. It won't be until it actually impacts their bottom line or they're hearing stories about it impacting competitors' bottom line for them to actually care, which is why we're focused on the markets that do have compliance responsibilities today, because they care and that means dollars for them.
No, so folks who want to get into this kind of business, is this sell that you go up to the company and say, hey, don't you want to have your compliance checklist straight? We can help you get secure. And it's part of like a security sell versus like a efficiency sell. Maybe it might have been a previous digital transformation, or maybe a mixture of both. Yeah,
it's a mixture of both. It really is an efficiency sell. But here's how I've been pitching it and discussing it is your team needs to use an LLM and they are, and they're leaking data from your business right now, but they need to leverage this to boost their own efficiency. And if you don't give them a tool, they're going to go off and do it on their own. And that is a substantial security and financial risk for your company. And the second point that is really resonating with people is grow without hiring. That's how you need to use AI right now. You can grow your company by boosting the efficiency of your existing employees without having to hire a bunch more bodies at a much lower cost than it would be to hire a bunch. It's not, we're going to replace your workforce and you can lay off a bunch of people. No, it's not that. It's we can grow without having to add a bunch more people, because I can tell you this right now, nobody wants to hire right now because of just all the macroeconomic uncertainty that's in the world. And so that's really resonating with people. That's like something that really clicks.
Here's a question about really good points there. Here's a question about the earlier point you brought up where there's old established companies that have mountains of data. And I've had clients myself, things like in the insurance industry, and they have certain things that would be like a ML gold mine, right? If you really started picking through there. So then that's one major opportunity. I want to pick your brain about this. Do you think that another opportunity is that you can build that mountain of data using some kind of a freemium offering where you get folks, and that's harder to pull off, right? Virality is hard to plan. But if you get folks coming in and using some product and they're offering some kind of useful data that you're not stealing, but it's just some usage data, do you see an opportunity there? Is that a little bit more remote?
That's hard to do. That's hard to do. And the reason is that to get anyone to use anything, it has to be really valuable to them.
Yeah.
Like, it's not easy to get user adoption. It's never been easy. You have to have an excellent product to do that. So now in that scenario, you are back in the SaaS mindset of I have to build tooling or a platform or a product that's so good that people want to use it, even if it's free. Sometimes free is actually harder than paid. When people are paying, then mentally they're like, I really should be using this. I really should use my HubSpot more because it's expensive versus this tool that's free. I could use it or lose it and it doesn't matter all that much to me. So I do think that while there might be entrepreneurs that find a way to do that, getting adoption is just so hard. And it's only getting harder because there's the barrier to entry is so low for new SaaS products.
Extending from what you said, a lot of folks nowadays are saying that AI will replace SaaS. I think that statement and that phrase is a little bit problematic, but where do you think that's true and not true?
Yeah, I don't really think that's true in terms of companies actually using SaaS platforms. AI is not replacing Salesforce, right? The original OG of SaaS. What it's doing is providing an interface for these SaaS platforms. But you still need like all of the data structures and workflows and processes that have been developed over many years. You still need that behind the curtain, right? Because the LLMs are not good enough yet at being consistent and ensuring that workflows follow the proper processes and all the rest of it. So I don't see it necessarily being a SaaS killer today. What I do see is it killing the old, like I mentioned, the kind of old SaaS startup model. That's what's getting killed right now, is that just doesn't play anymore in these markets. And you can't raise capital on an idea anymore. You need customers and revenue to really raise capital like these days. And so that's what's getting killed right now. But I still think the underpinnings and like the work behind the scenes work needs to be done with software as a service. I do.
Okay. So let's double click on that. What you said is, so let's imagine that you've got a SaaS founding team, two founders and two developers and one designer or something. And they're building a accounting thing that has good BI, right? And you say, okay, accountants can come in here. In what way would they have run that company 8 years ago versus what way do they need to run that now?
That's a great question. And I'm seeing startups that are doing it the old way and startups that are doing it the new right way. And it's part of how I'm helping to advise companies right now, which is that the product development needs to be AI first. And what I mean by that, all right, is you're this accounting company and this startup, and you need to integrate with all sorts of different third-party systems that are already in the market, right? Which is like every software startup. And the way that used to work is you had a connector team of engineers and their whole job was building out connections and then maintaining them, because every API update for every third-party system needs to be updated, right? And you wake up in the morning and your unit tests ran and two connectors broke and you need to go fix them, right? And then you have your queue of new connections, of all these new platforms that customers are requesting, all the rest of it. That's the old way. That's not how it should work anymore. Instead of building out a team of engineers to work on connectors, you need to build out your system that can ingest API documentation and create and update your connectors. Right? That's how it needs to work. Your developers should focus on that so that you can spin up a new connection in a day because your system is really good, right? That's what I mean by developing AI first. It still requires developers. It's just what they're focused on should be building the tooling to make improvements really fast and really efficiently with a high quality versus actually making those things themselves, right? It's about the tooling, not the actual code.
Excellent. Hunter, this has been really great. Hunter Jensen is who we've been talking to. Where can people, who should reach out to you and how do you engage?
Absolutely. First of all, I love talking about this stuff. I would encourage anyone to reach out to me. I will respond if it's not a robot. And I'm happy to talk to people. You don't have to have a budget or be like a potential customer for us. If you have something interesting that you think we could talk about, hit me up. So to that end, my email is hunter@barefootsolutions.com. Fill out the contact form on our website, or I'm very active on LinkedIn as well. So you can hit me up there. And I do. I encourage the listeners to reach out if you have something about AI or software or tech that you want to chat about. I love doing it.
Awesome. Hunter Jensen from Barefoot Solutions. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Thomas. This was great.
Okay, so that's the end of the thing. Yeah, great. Great conversation, by the way. That was really good. Very insightful. A lot of really useful things. So that'll probably come out. Let's see, my backlog of interviews is a little behind. So that'll probably come out in June, like sometime mid-June or something like that. And I don't know if you know what we do. This is just a cross-pollination conversation. Let me just quickly pull up my website. By the way, I would not have known. I did not know that picture was AI.
It's good, right?
Yeah, I looked it up while you were talking about that. I was like, if someone told me to look for AI pictures and this was in a set, I might guess it because of the smoothness of the suit. But I did. I saw it and I didn't know.
And that was like a year and a half ago. Imagine if I did it again today, it would be even better.
Yeah, I needed a headshot for someone who appeared on my show one time and they didn't have one. And then so I went to one of those early tools. It was like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit shoddy. It was like he wore his headphones all the time. So there'd be like one or two or headphones on top of headphones in the pictures because they like didn't know how to just draw his face without that. But yeah, the tools are constantly getting better. No, I just wanted to throw this out there, Hunter. So my company, we do UX. I don't know if you took a peek at what we do, but we do UX for startups and digital transformation. And we have a pretty good portfolio. We've got a really good team I've built over the years. And I just wanted to throw that out there. Now, whenever I've had any conversation where it's like, hey, you have a tech team, I have a design team, we always have this conversation like, oh my God, that would be awesome, but it never materializes. But I wanted to throw it out there anyway, just in case, right?
Yeah. So we have a UX design team.
Okay.
My partner, who serves as our chief operating officer right now, but is a UI UX designer, has a team.
Nice.
So we are very UX first.
Nice.
With that being said, we do bring in third parties for overflow or
projects. Extra projects that
aren't a good fit. To put
your personnel onto it. Yeah.
Exactly. Just as an example, Peter, who runs that team, is booked like for the next 4 months just on Titleist, the golf company.
Wow.
And so he's got a few other team members, but like we do, it is a bottleneck for us. I will say that because the way we're structured is I have a parent company. I sold a controlling interest in Barefoot in 2019 and they have 1500 engineers and that's who does all of our dev. And so I have effectively limitless development resources, but I only use my team for UI UX, which is a small team. And so we get bottlenecked often on that. So I can certainly keep it in mind there. It's also just really nice to connect with agency owners. I love talking to agency owners and I always recommend the same one thing whenever I talk to them, which is that, have you ever heard of the Bureau of Digital?
Bureau of Digital, no.
Look it up. It's like an industry group for digital agencies of, so that would be dev shops, design shops, marketing shops, SEO shops. And
oh, wow.
They do these camps where 20 or 30 owners like go somewhere for a weekend or a few days that are incredible. And you learn so much. And then there's a Slack where you can just message like 500 digital agency owners. Hey, what are you guys using for HR software? And it's,
wow.
Oh, everybody's using
JustWorks. Whatever.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But it saves me hours and hours of research to just be able to like ping the group and get like feedback.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty cheap to become a basic member. I don't get anything out of, this is not an affiliate.
Yes.
For me, I'm genuinely recommending it because I find it to be tremendously valuable and you might too. So I'd recommend just check it out. And if it's for you, there's like really low levels of entry just to get involved. But
I know you're not in it for the leads, but do you happen to get leads from it?
Now and again. But what happens is there's like a channel for new leads, but like 20 people respond.
That's true. That's true. That's what it is. It's a haven for agencies. So you're there for the information, like to stay hip on.
Just like people to talk to that understand how my business works, like is the valuable part. Or like, have you guys ever run it? I'll give you an example. There's a new kind of predatory lawsuit that's starting to happen right now. And there are ways to combat it. But I don't know if you've ever gotten like a takedown notice, like the, what is it, DCPA or whatever, DCMA?
I've gotten one of those when I was doing like some kind of a campaign and it made a claim that turned out to be false, but that we were using some like
some image you're not supposed to. There's like a new version of that, like your privacy policy and your terms and conditions are like not up to speed in certain areas or whatever. And somebody posted about it the other day in the Slack channel, like, hey, I just got this notice from a law firm. And apparently they're sending out like hundreds of these things. Here's how you mitigate it. Or here's how to respond to it. And so I just went this morning and updated our like terms and conditions to prevent that. That's so valuable, right? Because it's only a matter of time until I got one of those. But now I'm like much more protected than I would have been. It's like that kind of thing, like owners just helping other owners. It's over the years, it's been really great for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Listen, stay in touch. And if you think there's any introduction at any point that makes sense with a tech lead or whatever, I'd love to hop on. But yeah, this is really good. I enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, just stay in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Thomas. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. You too. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.